Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Paula Vogel's Broadway debut, Indecent, is about Sholem Ash's God of Violence, of Vengeance, I'm sorry, an early 20th century play that's set in a brothel and features a tender lesbian romance between a 17-year-old girl and a prostitute. It challenged and provoked the conventional wisdom of its day, just as Indecent does for our own times. New York One calls it 100 minutes of potent theatrical magic. It's at the Court Theater at West 48th Street, and I'm very pleased it has brought Paula Vogel back to our show, along with the play's director and co-creator, Rebecca Teichman. Welcome.
Thank you.
And congratulations to each of you on your Tony nominations. Now, why did you call it Indecent? What were you referring to?
Well, Indecent, it was in the indictment from the Vice Squad, from the courts of New York, when in 1923 they closed down the play and arrested the cast and producer for obscenity.
Is it fair to say that the God of Vengeance is the protagonist of this play?
Yes.
What's the plot of the God of Vengeance?
So it's about a Jewish family who runs a brothel in their basement, and the father slash pimp is obsessed with the piety of his young daughter. So he has forbidden her from going into the basement. He's commissioned a Torah scroll for her. He's arranging a marriage for her with a young Torah scholar. And of course, this young girl finds her way into the basement and falls madly in love with one of the women prostitutes.
Was it a radical departure at the time for a play to portray a lesbian love affair in a positive way?
Yes. Yeah. Not so much. It's interesting. There's a line in the play about why are so many men writing brothel plays. There were a lot of brothel plays, the fallen woman plays at the time. But I don't know of any other. Do you? I mean,
no, I think he was out on a limb.
Where was it performed first?
It was first performed in Berlin. What was that?
In
1910
Yiddish?
In Yiddish. It went all over the world on tour and was really a critical success. Audiences flocked to it, and it went to England, and it played on the Lower East Side here in New York without comment for years. Very popular in the repertory until it was someone's bright idea to translate it into English. It went uptown, as they say, to the Provincetown Players in the Village. It was popular there. But rabbis were getting concerned. People were getting concerned that this glimpse of life was happening and being shown to Gentile audiences at a time.
They felt it was contributing to anti-Semitism?
Yes, that's right.
So it was ultimately actually a rabbi from Temple Emmanuel who lodged the complaint. So it was really from within the Jewish community that an issue was raised.
And it's interesting, Temple Emmanuel is considered a rather liberal institution.
I mean, I think you have to project yourself backwards. We can relate now in many, many ways, but to a time of really virulent and fierce anti-Semitism in which the borders to the U.S. were being completely shut down, huge immigration restriction. And I think that there was a real and understandable fear of putting this particular piece of art on Broadway at that moment.
Paula, you've said that you thought it was important to remember a time when Jews and Italians and Irish were not seen as Americans.
Yes, they weren't seen as Americans. They were seen as aliens. I mean, there were signs up saying no Irish may apply or no Italians, no Jews. And as we know, there are a lot of places still today where Jewish membership is frowned upon.
Hadn't the producers gone out of their way to alter the play, to make it more what they thought would be acceptable to the theater-going middle class?
So when they moved it, they performed it in English downtown at the Greenwich Village Theater, complete. And then when they were moving it to Broadway, the producer, it seems, felt that it was important to make edits in the love scene between the two women, which sort of shifted the dynamic to being about this very consensual love to being a little bit more of a kind of villain seducing this young girl.
Was the objection from the community a case of established immigrants making it more difficult for newcomers?
You know, that's an interesting thing. I do want to say that, you know, this is a time where Henry Ford has a newspaper that is publishing false news about international Jewish conspiracies.
That was the Dearborn
Independent.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I really think it was a pretty virulent atmosphere, more than the established, you know, uptowners looking. There were a lot of philanthropy groups going downtown.
Should I assume that both of you came upon it in text? Have either of you seen it performed?
I've seen it performed, God of Vengeance, performed many times. Joe Chaykin did a version of it in Atlanta, a wonderful, wonderful theater director. And there was a version of it at Williamstown. And then very recently, a version in, playing in Yiddish, which we both saw. So it's a, you know, it's a huge gift to get to see the full play.
And although it's very much of its time, is it depressing that the themes of the play remain so relevant today?
It's, I think, a cause for concern, yes. A little wake-up alarm here to see how much it's resonating right now.
Now, Rebecca, this isn't the first theatrical treatment of The God of Vengeance that you've worked on. Was the first one about the trial?
Yeah, it was purely about the moment in New York in 1923. It really did not work. It was called The People Versus the God of Vengeance, and it interwove transcript from the obscenity trial, which was an interesting trial, but ultimately not didn't make for great theater interwoven with the text of the play. What was clear from that, from creating that, was that it was an important memory to caretake or story to tell.
And then both of you have worked together on four productions of this play over how many years?
Seven, eight.
Have you had the same cast throughout?
Miraculously, yes. I mean, it's the most un-American experience. It's been really an extraordinary building of a company over a long period of time. They've been performing this play for 2 years on and off, but that we've kept them all together, you know, it allows for the performances to deepen in extraordinary ways.
Yes, and I want to say in a way that because they are so multi-talented, people may be surprised when they come in that it's actually a love letter to the theater. These actors sing, dance. We have a klezmer band. So it's more about a tribute as well to what was lost in the Yiddish theater and celebrating that. And these actors do it all. So we could actually do rewrites around our cast.
And you have given us portions of the original within this play. So we get a sense. Does it feel dated?
No. And I
mean,
Rebecca,
beyond the themes, class, gender, oppression, censorship, obviously they're not dated.
There's nothing dated about, I think, this play, Indecent, or about God of Vengeance.
I didn't mean Indecent. But
God of Vengeance, there's nothing dated about it.
So Ash was a good playwright?
I think he was. He wrote this when he was 24 years old. And if he'd gone on writing plays, I think he'd very much be in the canon.
Yeah, well, he wrote novels after that. And
yeah.
He became a major Yiddish writer, published. There were a couple of his books in my father's collection.
Yes, yes, a wonderful novelist.
We're speaking with Paula Vogel and also Rebecca Teichman about new production of Indecent, which is currently at the Court Theater on West 48th Street. Originally, this was presented off-Broadway. What led to the decision to bring it to Broadway?
A group of really wonderful producers, Daryl Roth, Cody Lassen, Liz McCann, made the extraordinary and glorious choice to move it uptown just as God of Vengeance did in 1923. Luckily, our opening night went differently. We weren't all tossed in jail.
One of the reasons I also think that these extraordinary producers decided to move it is I haven't experienced this in a very, very long time, not since How I Learned to Drive. People don't want to leave the theater.
Mm-hmm.
They want to continue talking about the play. They want to tell us about their own immigrant families and their stories of their grandparents. And kids are coming out saying, gee, I've got to talk to my grandmother or my grandfather. So it's almost like a living room on the sidewalk outside the Court Theater every night.
I've never really been in a theater where the entire audience is still and simultaneously gasping. And, you know, I think it creates a really extraordinary experience.
Do you think it's partly because of our times? Is it fair to say that your play is an intentionally political play in a way that The God of Vengeance probably was not?
Yes. Well, I actually think The God of Vengeance was a political play. It was written by this fiery young writer who wanted to talk about the hypocrisy of men and religion towards women. He was a feminist way, way, way ahead of the curve, ahead of the time. So I think that the original play, right, is political.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we said yes to working on this because we were alarmed about the division going on in this country 10 years ago and about the way that we are starting to treat immigrants as mm-hmm. outcast and marginalized communities.
From the first scene that is completely visual, why did you decide to start with a reference to the Holocaust, which obviously occurred after the time of this play?
We actually go full circle. There's a framing device. It's not an arbitrary choice at all. Let me just put it this way. I wanted, with Rebecca, rather than to write a play about the obscenity trial, to look at Jewish life and history in America. And that's a much longer journey to mm-hmm. tell. And I also, I mean, we have a reference late in the play to Oklahoma, written by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein. Here is a man who his cast was arrested on Broadway, 1923, and we come up to the time where Oklahoma is playing on Broadway.
I don't think if you come in and you see the play that what that image that opens the piece is referring to actually becomes clear until quite late. Mm. There's a tremendous joy and an invitation actually at the beginning of Indecent to forget what is coming and to remember the tremendous hope and potential and possibility and joy that was in this community as they were moving this play.
And of course, the players don't know what's going to ensue in Europe when they go back to
exactly
Europe.
Right. It was before the paradigm was set in 1939.
Now, you mentioned Oklahoma, but, Paul, I know that you're a big Thornton Wilder fan. Is the character Lemuel a tribute to the stage manager in our town?
It absolutely is. We worked on the first draft in Thornton Wilder's cabin at the McDowell Colony, and it is absolutely a little love letter to Thornton Wilder.
It is the cabin in which he wrote Our Town. It somehow infused, I think, this vision of this beautiful stage manager for Paula.
And I was wondering if this is a bit of, maybe this is an odd comparison, but Rebecca, is this play struck me as kind of a sweet tribute to the theater, mm-hmm. and in that it reminded me a little bit of Stage Kiss, the Sarah Gould play.
I think that both Sarah and Paula have this extraordinary love of the theatrical and a wild, unbounded imagination that is sort of every director's dream. And in that sense, in that there was sort of a great humor and profound complexity in both plays, I think is an apt.
You've talked about product placement in this play.
I do.
What do you mean by that, Paula?
Can you tell that I'm a child of an advertiser? A copywriter. We are hoping that when people leave the theater, that they go running to the library and pick up, a translation of God of Vengeance. And I hope it's done much more often. That's what we hope.
Is the God of Vengeance remembered primarily as a great play or as a great scandal?
I think it's more right now, right, remembered as a scandal.
Mm-hmm.
It is a 19th century play, and if it's given the same care and vision that Rebecca gives classics, it will be remembered as a great play.
Now, language is an important element of Indecent. How did you choose to deal with it?
Okay, well, I only speak a little tiny bit of Yiddish, but what I wanted was to have titles in Yiddish so that people in the audience who speak Yiddish can actually read the play, and at the end the Yiddish disappears. So Yiddish in a way is also a character in the play, and I wanted it to happen, which Rebecca did beautifully. At the end of the play there is a scene in Yiddish, and we as English speakers understand every word.
Also, Paula had an extraordinary idea so that when people are speaking their native tongue, they speak sort of standard American. When they flip into a language that is not their own, when they're speaking English, they become heavily accented. It's quite, I mean, it took me a while to sort of catch up to Paula on that vision, and it pays off in an extraordinary way, so that there's this dialogue about language while still speaking English all the way through.
Part of the loss that we could also talk about is the loss of Yiddish theater. Second
yes.
Avenue had a number of theaters that thrived into, I think, the 60s, perhaps, and produced some of the great writers of America, I mean, great actors of American theater.
Right.
Actors who went from the Yiddish theater into regular English language theater. So all of that is lost.
All of that is lost. All of that is remembered, and all of that is celebrated.
How did each of the two of you find each other for this project?
I had been tracking Rebecca's work for some time, and I had read that this young director put the obscenity trial on stage for her dissertation. I thought, who is this woman? Then flash forward 10 years later, you know, we had found out that we both read the play in our 20s in library stacks. Out of the blue, she called me and said, are you interested in working with me on the obscenity trial of God of Vengeance? And I said, I think it's a bigger journey. I think it's a longer journey. And you said, do what you want. And I don't know. For me, it felt like 30 seconds before I said yes.
I think I had barely gotten the full sentence out. And you know, my dream had come true.
Did you realize that music would play such an important role in it from the start?
I always did. And I've listened to over 600 songs in this. And I mean, the music is really a joy in this. To have Lisa Gutkin and Aaron Halva writing and composing an original score beneath that music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally bringing the music back to life.
Yeah, there are really two scores to the play in a way. There are numbers, real musical numbers that sort of propel us through time that have a kind of wonderful Brechtian wildness. And then there is a through score that is written by Lisa and Aaron that really scores the entire play.
Did you audition the musicians as actors as well?
I mean, it was so obvious that they had a very authentic beauty on stage. There was no need for any audition. You know, just that they could be present and honest on stage is sort of the only thing that was necessary. And they are just divine.
Did you aspire for your play to serve the same purpose as the God of Vengeance during a difficult time?
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
Is the play also about the value of art, especially in times of political and social crisis?
That's what you've been saying, and I think that really says it the best, that it's about making art in difficult times.
And increasingly, it feels painfully relevant more and more every day. And, you know, it is a sort of a cri de coeur for the power and the importance of creativity and self-expression as sort of the, you know, there's greater and more terrifying sort of censorship barreling down.
Why did you choose to frame so much of the play from the point of view of the men, Lemel and Ash, since the women are such an important part of the story?
Well, this was really one of the challenges. There's very little written about the women in the troupe. What we know about is the men. I mean, this is history rather than herstory. I created the role of Lemel. I created the role of the actresses in the troops. And all of that was to try and float the vision of what these two women in the rain in love with each other looked like to a 24-year-old in 1906 Warsaw.
And there really is, Paula has woven through the entire play a sort of persistent and ever-shifting love story between two women in many, many multiple variations.
Now, this is a time when there were a number of censorship trials. How did this one work out?
They were found guilty. They were fined. Unfortunately, it was the end of the career of one of the great Yiddish theater actors, Rudolf Schildkraut. And the
father of Joseph Schildkraut?
That's right.
And who was a great actor.
Yes.
Well.
Great actor.
I mean, I think that Rudolf Schildkraut really thought he was at the beginning of an extraordinary crossover. Instead, it was the end. Harry Weinberger, who was a sort of a wild man, represented a lawyer who also produced the play on Broadway, represented Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, fought for the rights for birth control. He never gave up. and he eventually had the verdict overturned.
But the damage was already done. By the way, I believe in circles. We are performing at the Court Theater, which is where Joseph Schildkraut made his debut as Otto Frank in A Diary of Anne Frank. And that we perform on that stage every night.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. I've been speaking with Paula Vogel and Rebecca Teichman about Indecent, now at the Court Theater on West 48th Street. An open run?
Open run.
Open run.
Well, let's hope it goes for a long time.
Thank you so much.
Or at least until I go to the cops and complain. And
thank you, Leonard. That would be a thrill.
All the boys.